I'm fast asleep here. I'm the president, but I can't stick to time. When I say I'll be in the family meeting at 6, I arrive much later.
Did you watch it?
I did.
Well, you did? James,
I tried to.
Actually, you couldn't sink any lower, and you watched the fucking president. Weren't you watching Wimbledon? Because that's what I was doing.
No, let me reword that. I tried to watch it. I did jump in at about 7:10, yeah. And DNC told me that he was late, then I gave up on trying to watch him. So no, I didn't. Almost.
Ugh. He was late. I knew it was happening because X and Instagram were telling me that Cyril Ramaphosa is hosting a thing. I was like, oh, that, I forgot about it. But I didn't go to it.
Yeah, I'm so annoyed. I was telling Flex this morning on the way here, during COVID, he came out and he did the first few family meetings. He was on time.
Yeah.
He had confidence.
And then he lost all of that.
What happened?
I don't know. He fell off the wagon.
He lost an iPad and then it all went downhill.
Maybe that's where it all went wrong. He's still trying to find that iPad and he's so distracted he can't do anything else properly. All right, let's look at some sport from the weekend. There was a lot of sport. There was a lot of good sport to watch. Everybody's talking about the book rugby win on Saturday. Correct. PE, right?
Correct. In Port Elizabeth, where nothing happens. No. 45-0 was what the Springboks did this weekend.
Yeah, it's really... Italy's not coming back.
No, a lot better.
They've had a shitty time. They don't want to come back.
So last week we beat them 42-25, if I'm not mistaken. This week we said, no, you guys aren't scoring any tries.
Yeah, nothing.
Just us.
Zero.
We were the only try scorers here. 45-0, whatever you want to call it. That's how it happened.
Yeah, I think you're mixing tennis here, but okay.
So we beat them 45-0.
Cool.
Under 20 Springboks are also in action. They're through to the semifinals of the Under 20 World Cup in Italy, of all places. They're set to face Argentina on the 14th, which is today, actually. Wimbledon, mm-hmm. I didn't know you were much of a tennis sports guy?
No, I'm not.
Is that a thing?
I like the Wimbledon men's final because I think it's always the best people. These guys are seeded first and second, right? Alcaraz is, and they're both new.
Yeah.
They're relatively new.
Yeah.
I've lived through the era of Roger Federer, of Rafael Nadal, of Djokovic. Mm. And even though I'm not a tennis fan who can tell you a whole lot of things about the game, I've always kind of watched Wimbledon. I suppose it's also because in the middle of winter, it's a nice thing to do. You're not going to go outside. You're going to be inside. You're going to be watching the Wimbledon men's final. It's a big event. And Wimbledon's by far the most important tennis championship in the world.
Iconic, for
sure. All the others just look kind of lame and a bit pathetic. Wimbledon's got credibility.
It's
got class, it's got gravity, it's got, you know, you got that magnificent Princess of Wales. That Kate is just she's divine, right? She's divine. She's unbelievably fucking perfect. And she hands over the trophy. So even if I just had to watch her doing that, it would make it worthwhile for me. The fact that you had Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz against each other, both rising stars in every which way. I mean, Alcaraz has already won it twice.
Yeah.
And I believe Sinner is the first Italian to win Wimbledon, which is quite a big deal.
Also,
and some amazing points. I mean, there were moments where I was going, which I don't normally do for sport, but very good.
Mm. Very exciting. Like you say, Sinner did beat Alcaraz 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. And 4-6, quite a win. Fourth Grand Slam for Sinner, and his first ever Wimbledon win. Did you watch the women's one also, or no?
Nah,
not that one.
Swiatek won, right?
Correct. No. Iga Swiatek dominated Anna Samova with a historic 6-love whitewash.
I did see the wheelchair stuff on. So I went to gym yesterday, and the wheelchair stuff was on in the morning, late morning.
Yes.
But I didn't watch it. Who wants to see that?
Marv proposed an interesting question the other day in the office.
Oh, no.
He said, what would happen if you played a professional wheelchair tennis person? Do you think you would stand a chance of actually winning?
If I played and I had to be in a wheelchair?
No, you're running and around and stuff.
I'd probably be worse than the wheelchair person.
I think so too, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Because those guys can move so quickly in those things. But
100%.
But the reason I said I didn't watch it is because I know that there are people in the world who want everything to be the same and they want us to all love everything the same way. I don't watch the women's football because it's just not as good. I don't watch the wheelchair tennis because it's just not as good.
It's not as entertaining.
So guys, don't be cross with me and expect me to lie to you and say, no, the wheelchair finals are very important. Or even the doubles. Okay, the doubles, yeah. I'm sure there are people who love doubles tennis.
Yeah.
But to me, there is nothing more important than the men's singles final at Wimbledon. Otherwise, I don't even watch half these. I watched three quarters of the Springbok rugby this weekend. I'm not your guy for that stuff. That's why you got James here.
Well, and then the Ben thing on Fridays. So yeah, that was Wimbledon this weekend.
They're doing that Tour de France?
It's so exciting. I love the Tour de France.
See, again, ooh, something I don't love understand. So, the Tour de France. So educate us.
I was going to do the under 20 AFCON, but I'm going to go straight to the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. Okay. So once a year, Tour de France happens in June, July-ish. It's obviously around France. Mm-hmm. They go up the Alps. They go through the Pyrenees. Mm-hmm. What's really cool about the Tour de France is not only are you watching like a cycling race, but every now and then they'll like do these random aerial shots of like these castles and
beautiful countryside.
Palaces and stuff in the France countryside of France. And then it gets really exciting in the last like maybe 5 kilometers only out of 186 in a day.
Now, why they have to spoil a tour around France with beautiful aerial shots and magnificent buildings and landscapes, why they have to spoil that with cyclists, I do not understand.
It's very exciting. It's cool.
Does the Tour de France still have like a superstar? Like, remember back in the day, the superstar was like Lance Armstrong. Yeah. Is there still someone like that that like we can refer to and be like, oh, I know that one person?
So they have two. The past 3 years or so, there's been two guys that are back and forthing with each other.
Yeah.
One guy's name is Jonas Vingegaard. That's the one.
Okay.
And the other one is, damn it, I've blanked on his name, Tadej Pogacar.
Tiddy what?
Tadej.
What about titties? What?
Tadej.
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 Oh, today.
Tadej.
Oh, okay.
Pogacar.
They're saying titties. Okay, Tadej, gotcha.
Those two homies, they're against each other.
Okay, so they're the guys to watch.
They're the guys to watch.
Is it finished yet?
No, they're only on stage 9. I think there's 21 stages. Oh, it's a 3-week thing. They do it every day for 3 weeks except Mondays is their rest days.
Oh,
every day. Some days they'll do up to 200Ks in a day.
Okay. I mean, that's impressive.
It's pretty brutal to watch. And I think it's just exciting because you can see what these guys kind of put their bodies through. And then when they come off those bikes, they're obviously wearing like half latex, whatever. And you can actually see like, you
the
know,
marks.
The marks and the damages that it causes.
Oh, pretty exciting. Bones sticking out of lycra kind of shit. Yeah.
On Tadej Gotcha.
Go watch the Tadej
Broken
Gotcha.
Broken bones.
Show.
Can you imagine
I'm going to go check it out.
Imagine you how awful it is to like injure yourself really badly on the Tour de France.
Oh, it must be awful.
Because I think for a lot of these people, it costs them money to enter, right? Only if you win do you kind of get a return on your investment. The bikes are expensive.
Some of these bikes
are more expensive. Imagine you seriously injure yourself on the Tour de France. Now you have to be schlepped around and people have to give you medical attention. Your bike is screwed. Those bikes cost like 200,000 rand or something each.
You and your bike must be schlepped around.
Yeah.
Oh,
who wants to do that?
Coming off there is not a fun time.
Sure.
Yeah. So that is the Tour de France. I don't think there is a stage today, but it kicks off again tomorrow, which is very exciting. In the world of, Gareth, I know you said nobody's interested in women's football, and I'm not either, but I think it's important to acknowledge.
Oh, please. Just make it quick.
Banyana are playing at the WAFCON at the moment. They're through to the quarterfinals. They have 4 points from their first two games. They've got one game left. I've made that as quick as possible. WAFCON, we're doing the things. Also, another AFCON tournament, under-20s. Our under-20s won the AFCON this weekend, guys.
Ooh.
That's something to be proud of. Our football is doing something in the world. And then lastly, speaking of football, Chelsea did the things. They did the unthinkable. They won the Club World Cup. They won that 1 billion, Gareth, that we spoke about a few weeks ago. They won all that money. Donald was present. Air Force One was present.
The greatest.
He was there.
Right. Okay.
Shame, man. Americans really know how to ruin football. So here's what happened. They did the opening ceremony. This okay. is normal for a football tournament.
Sure.
Opening ceremony, sharp. But that's where it ends for football. Then they play the game, and the biggest moment of the day is lifting the trophy.
Yeah.
That's the biggest moment.
Yes.
What the Americans have done, opening ceremony, halftime Super Bowl lame show right. thing
oh, yes.
with Coldplay and oh, like right. love everyone vibes.
Right.
Then at the end, Donald handed the trophy over. Most of the time, the golden moment is when you hand the trophy over and the players lift that thing for the first time.
Yeah.
That's the moment. Donald handed the trophy over, and then he decided to stand there with the Chelsea players on the stage.
I'm while sure they loved it.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, he is the most famous person in the whole world.
True.
Yeah.
True. But it's the last thing I think footballers care about.
Is you know that it's a year game. Since they tried to kill him?
Really?
It's been a year
it's
now.
It's a year since they tried to kill Donald Trump. That guy shot him on that roof in Damn. Butler, Pennsylvania.
Damn.
It's been a year. It doesn't feel like a year.
It doesn't. No. It feels like it just happened.
Right.
No.
That is crazy.
He just hosted a successful Club World Cup, so good on him.
Wow.
He has an ear. And that was the sport from this weekend.
Well, no, Lovely. Because oh, no. Patrick says, only I seemed to watch the surfing in J-Bay this weekend.
That was also this
Unfortunately,
weekend.
Geordie Smith was eliminated. I mean, you go to Jeffreys Bay.
I do.
You should know the place. You should stand up for Jeffreys Bay. This is your one opportunity, and you piss it away.
I wanted to be there this week for the competition, but I just I'm working.
Is stuff. It freezing cold?
That's
it?
What I was asking about, because I spoke to my mom this weekend, yeah. and she said it's absolutely freezing.
Yeah.
So are they surfing?
They're surfing in the...
Well, they put on a wetsuit or whatever.
But are there any black people in that competition? I'd imagine not.
No, there might be, hey? There might be.
Oh.
There might be. Listen, these days you can't say definitely for anything.
Yeah, that's
There's
true.
Always someone who like throws out the algorithm. these athletes, these sport guys struggle with drug problems. Like Koketso says, Kagiso Rabada.
He got like suspended a few months ago for a drug-related thing that had to do with certain white lines. That's
Apue yeah, says, I love women who play sports and I do watch them play various sports. Yeah, but we know what you're watching for.
Go sports. Go women. Yay.
Our football is doing something.
They are. Here. They yeah, are doing right. the things.
Good, yeah.
Under 20 AFCON is what they won.
All right. The new Olympic sport, the armed AI drone wheelchair tournament is going to be good.
Imagine, I can't wait.
Imagine that. Thank you, Parallel Parking. That's excellent. Kogetsu also says, cocaine is a crazy adrenaline rush. Draw the line on weed, people.
Draw a line. Yeah. Period.
I don't know.
There we go. That's far more interesting than the Tour de France.
Yeah, that is wild. If I saw it, what is that?
Is that a cow?
I think that's a pug. No, it's a goat.
Is it a pug? No, it's a pug. It's a dog.
Riding a bike.
Wow. All right. Well, just before we get to our guest, who I know is waiting for us. Thank you, James. Is that all?
I'm going to go fetch her.
That's James.
That's what I'm going
to Okay, so get our guest ready. And in the meantime, let me just show you something that I sent to James that I thought would be quite interesting since we're showing wild animals. This is a leopard that stands on its hind legs like a human to see its prey. I think this is a pretty wild video. I'm not sure where it comes from. Someone in the Kruger Park, I think. But this is cool. Take a look at this. Take this thing. It's like, can't really see. I think I'm going to, there we go. Sits for a little bit and then... Check that out, hey? It's pretty amazing. And then it goes, I still can't really see. Let's see if I can get an even better view. Yeah, there it is. It's amazing,
what?
Huh?
That is scary, Gareth.
Yeah. I think that's amazing.
That is absolutely amazing
right?
and kind of scary.
Yeah.
Imagine walking in the Kruger at night and you see a leopard cool. standing.
Yeah. And then here's some old people. Flex, have you got that thing of the old people at the doctor? Okay, take a look at this. We need sound on this one, I think.
That's really impressive, Mr. Smith, but I said I wanted to listen to your heart.
Ha 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 ha! you need some stupid in your morning. Our guest, Kaylee Jorgensen, Counselor of the Health Professions Council in South Africa. She also is the founder of Engage, that's Engage with an I, support. Her main focus is creating awareness, educating parents, teachers, and students on the mental health pressures of today's world, as well as resources and techniques to understand and cope better. And she was also in the Forbes Africa 30 Under 30. It's a list marking the 10th anniversary of recognition. It features individuals in business, technology, sport, and creative arts who've made significant impacts on the continent. And Kaylee is one of them. So it's a pleasure to have you here.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks. Nice of you to come in and see us. I mean, you're used to dealing with mental health problems. So look at what you got this morning. You and me and Mash. How exciting for you.
First thing on a Monday. It's
awesome.
I know.
It's terrific. All right. So let's just quickly talk about this Engage support. Tell me what it is.
So basically, Engage Support is a mobile and web-based app. We launch in schools and companies. And basically, so I'm a registered counselor. Mm-hmm. I've got my private practice, and working with children, adults, teenagers, I kind of noticed the need to make mental health more accessible. I think
definitely.
The thing is, everybody's got mental health, but it is so expensive to go to therapy.
It is.
And the problem is, like, everyone spoke about a mental health pandemic after COVID.
Yeah.
Like, we've gone through that and we're like at the bottom. Like, we are.
Do you think it's worse now than it's ever been?
To be honest, personally, I do, purely because we've got social media, we've got this idea of like society, you've got to be busy, you've got to keep going.
But Kaylee, don't you also think that self-reporting is part of the problem here? Because people assume that when they're not perfectly happy, they must have something wrong with them. And being unhappy is part of being human.
100%. But I think a lot of times, like, people will then feel unhappy and they don't know what to do about it. So they go to social media and they scroll and I've got this. And then you keep scrolling and you don't talk to anybody. So it gets bigger and bigger.
The cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why we, like, through Engage, we've got mental health resources. We've got a reporting system, a place to speak to counselors, because the thing is,
it's terrific that you can do this at scale.
Exactly.
Which is clever.
Exactly. And because that's why digital is so awesome.
Sure. And for most people, as you mentioned already, they can't necessarily afford, because it's becoming very expensive, to have a mental health practitioner of their own.
Yeah.
Right? So that's part of the problem. And also, it's sometimes out of reach for people. Maybe you live in a very far away rural part of the country. Maybe you live in a family where they think mental health is ridiculous. Maybe you've been so abused and so told that you are full of nonsense that you've just stopped talking to people. You just pretend everything's all right, even though you're breaking up inside. So there's that. But I do want to ask you about this, because I do think it's become almost like a badge of honor and or an excuse for some people to label themselves, to diagnose and label themselves with a mental health condition. So you meet people, we were just talking about this now, Mash and I were joking, a friend of mine went onto one of the AI engines, both of them, Grok and ChatGPT, and said, you know, he's looking for a partner, but he doesn't want someone with a serious cluster B mental disorder. Not an unreasonable request.
100%.
But it seems to me that these days, if you do go on social media, you do meet people, within the first couple of seconds, you don't even know who they are. And listen, I've got to say, put my credentials on the table right from the start. I've always believed mental health is as important, if not more, than physical health. On my radio show 15 years ago, we were talking about it, and people only knew two kinds of things. They knew mental health in terms of you're a reasonably balanced, okay person, you're lucky, you're fortunate, you just don't have any bad chemistry in your head, or you're crazy. That was all they were saying 15 years ago. So it's evolved. But I think people, within 5 minutes of meeting them, they're telling you about their severe depression, or they're pathologically anxious and they can't get up and they can't do things. And I just think it's too much. I think we've gone so far past the balance point that we're now, the train is motoring to the next station, and most of us should have got off five stops back.
100%. 100%. And I think that's the problem with like self-diagnosing, because we go to social media and we read up on all the symptoms and we're like, that's me. I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to kind of learn what am I, and then also just kind of like see what is appropriate to share and what is not appropriate to share.
Yes.
And that's why making mental health resources is so important, because the internet is not, you know, it's not categorized into this is real, this is valid, this is not, this is age appropriate, this is not. So we've got to have a platform where we can direct people to valid information and somewhere to actually just kind of validate their concerns, but also tell them like, okay, yes, this is the symptoms of depression. Go and see a GP or go and see this person, because you can't diagnose yourself. I mean, that is a huge problem that we're also seeing among teenagers, is TikTok, Instagram.
Yeah.
I've now got depression. I've got anxiety.
And when like, some 16-year-old who sees 15 other people on TikTok telling her that they're depressed, she thinks, oh, well, this is obviously something I have.
Yeah,
exactly. I want to have this.
Hey guys, I'm depressed and emo. And all of a sudden,
and because
we all
maybe
are.
If I say I'm depressed, people won't be horrible to me at all. It's a way of escaping any kind of responsibility. But let's not go down that road, because I think we've made the point. Let's talk about where the serious problems are. So tell me, in your experience, and you think it's getting worse since COVID, maybe that was a major catalyst for a lot of this. What are the biggest mental health issues people are dealing with?
So I think it's varied. Depression, anxiety, suicide rates are increasing hugely, self-harm, and especially among the younger generation. Mm. So we are seeing suicide ideation, self-harming behavior starting much younger, so primary school age.
You got to explain that to me. Let's just start with suicide. That's obviously the biggest worry of them all, because that means people, and if they succeed at that, there's a life extinguished.
Exactly.
Okay. And for the people around them, it's an extraordinarily painful thing. And all of us have a deep well of compassion for the people who have to live on after a child has committed suicide. It must be the most awful thing for a parent or for friends or for family. So how come that is happening at such an accelerated rate in a time where life is objectively easier and better for young people than it's ever been? I mean, we joke on the show about working in the mines, but kids used to work in the mines. They weren't coming out of the mines and hanging themselves from a tree. They were getting on with their life. They were working in factories during the 1800s. They were sent to war, young men and sometimes women, but mostly men. Why is it that we're now dealing with people who are, it seems, more fragile than they've ever been? They think life is much harder for them, even though objectively you've got the world of information at your fingertips. There is more plentiful food than there's ever been. People used to have to grow that stuff, and we didn't have supermarkets. How can it be harder for them? Objectively, it probably isn't. Why do they feel that it is?
So I think if we just look at what's happening 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't social media, but there is. So that's obviously something
people
that
weren't killing themselves.
Yeah, but
at
we
the
also
rate they are now.
Maybe we don't know, because it wasn't always reported. So that's the difficult thing, is like we don't know. I think mental health has always been there, but I think the access to information is a huge problem. We are also seeing it's more reported, it's more spoken about, it's more, you know, the media shares information. So I think it's very, there's a two kind of side to it. It's, yes, I think it is kind of, it's too prevalent, if I can say. Like,
sure,
it's happening too much, but it's almost like we've got to kind of like take action now to stop it from getting worse, because we're in it. Mm. I think the youngest suicide in South Africa was 6. So,
ooh,
and that was...
What is a 6-year-old doing killing themselves?
Yeah. I know.
How does that happen?
Exactly. Ah. And it is, it's so sad, because it's, you know, like you're saying, suicide is that final point. Like, you can't come back from it. But it's, and that's why we've got to, and I think it starts like within the community. You've got to have that information of noticing the signs when someone is struggling, because a lot of times we say, you know, suicide is someone's looking for attention. But the problem
is, those
are
not the ones who actually succeed usually.
Exactly. And the problem is, if I say, oh, they're just looking for attention, it's fine. What happens if they're wrong? What if we're wrong? And what happens if they actually do it and
okay, but
can't go back?
Do we know? Because so often when people kill themselves, we're not sure why they did it.
Yeah. Nobody
do we know what the reasons are for some, at least some of these suicides? Is it because they have been horribly abused?
Yes.
And they've grown up in absolute misery and there's just, they don't see a better way out than to just leave this life.
Yeah.
Is that the worst?
I think trauma is a huge part to play. Trauma, peer pressure, bullying, huge, huge at the moment. I mean, like you've got physical bullying, like at schools, punching, kicking, fighting, whatever
happened,
it is.
Right.
Yeah. But now somebody's recording it on their phone. So, and then it goes viral. So you've got bullying that used to happen with 10, 15 witnesses. Now it's thousands and actually endless. So there's so many different contexts, family pressures. I mean, even if we just look at the workplace, there's this kind of like hustle culture. Keep going, keep going, keep going. You know, be overproductive. And parents are stressed. Families are stressed. That has its impact on the children. So I think that's where it's hard to say exactly what is causing it because it's so diverse. It's just, there's so many different factors at play.
Do you think that it's like a generational thing? Because you remind me of, there's actually a video that I saw on TikTok and YouTube a few months ago of a child who was basically confessing to their mother. She was basically telling her mother, this is what I've been through. While growing up, while living under your roof, this is the stuff that has happened to me. And the mother was like, how do you expect me to take the burden of your pain when I still have my own stuff that dealt with?
Yeah. How am what I kind of, I mean, that mother should be the one who's put in front of firing squad. Let me tell you, when an adult does that to a child, and I think that there are probably a lot of kids who grew up very fast in South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just look at our country because we have lots of trauma. We have lots of very broken, very dysfunctional families.
Exactly.
Kids are expected to be adult way too young. When a mother says, how do you expect me to deal with your trauma because I haven't got over mine? Listen, honey, you had the kid. The kid is your priority. You deal with your trauma when you get to old enough to have some time to yourself. Otherwise, how dare you put the child second to your own needs?
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
What kind of revolting person is that?
Huh? That's the reality also, Gareth. Eh? It is kind of generational to a certain extent.
But me, what about me? How about you think about someone else for once in your life? If you're a mum.
100%. And that's happening so often.
Yeah.
Like it is, and it's just so sad because now you've invalidated my experiences and you're telling me, actually, I can't speak to you.
Yeah.
I can't open up to the one person I should be.
How much of this is just narcissistic, self-absorbed selfishness? Because I wonder when I look around, how many people's problems would be solved if they just stopped thinking about themselves and actually thought about someone else? You know, people who are depressed and people who are anxious and they constantly navel gazing and always trying to evaluate their own personality, attitude, feelings, thoughts. They're in their own head so much that they're not even living in the real world. They may as well be AI.
Exactly. And then you've got people who they can't talk to anybody else. So then they turn to AI. I mean, I've got like 9-year-old clients who are going to AI in the middle of the night because they don't know what to do. So yeah, I think it's a cultural, societal problem at the moment. And that's where mental health is such a challenge.
I can definitely agree with that because even myself growing up, I used to actually, I couldn't talk to my parents because my parents were those parents, we've been through worse. Whatever you're going through.
So shut up.
We've been through worse. So shut up. I used to walk to school. Hey, mama, and this is how I feel. Hey, I used to walk to school. Shut up. I don't have time for this.
Hey, look, you've turned out all right.
You're taking a bus. You have heating in the bus. And you're telling me about someone telling you, calling you a mafia at school. Seriously, I don't have time for this. That's the experiences I had growing up. And looking back, it's kind of funny, but while it was happening, Gareth, I was mortified. I was mortified because I was being bullied. My parents didn't care because to them it was always, we've been through worse. What you're going through is nothing.
So I want to ask you both this because there isn't a right or wrong answer and you don't have to be qualified to be able to give me a thoughtful answer on this.
Yeah.
we were talking just now about something like depression, for example. I think we're raising kids, and there are adults who have grown up with the incorrect perception that life is always or should always be comfortable, that life should be easy, that that being alive should be as free of obstacles and as downhill and in a sports car as possible. And any time that you encounter anything that makes your life a little bit less than perfect and comfortable, there's got to be someone else to blame, something else to blame. You're not paying attention to something. You need to go deeper. You need to do mushroom journeys. You need to spend several hours on a... Life is meant to be exciting, loving, thrilling, ecstatic, but it's also risky, uncertain. These are things that we all have to deal with. Yeah. And character is only built by going through difficulty. I mean, you could sit here now on a show talking with a smile and laughing about what you went through as a kid. I'm sure it was hard, but my God, it's given you character.
Oh, yes, it has.
Right? And you are probably one of the most fearless and self-assured people I know. Maybe it was your mom saying, I don't have time for this, because you had to figure it out yourself. You weren't given Ritalin and put into cotton wool and told, don't worry, Mash, if those other kids are so mean to you, it's because they're horrible kids. And your mom phoned their parents and said, back off of Mash. You mustn't be so mean to my little Mash. Instead, you had to figure it out for yourself. Yes. So you developed character and personality and a sense of humor and a lot of other things probably. And maybe there's a bit of pain deep down, and maybe that's also okay. What do you think, Kaylee?
I think that it's such a critical point to develop resilience in kids, adults as well. Let's be honest, adults need to learn a little bit of resilience as well.
There are a bunch of them who don't have any.
Yeah. And that's, I think, the problem. Like, we need to develop resilience, but we also need to develop those coping techniques. And I'm a very strong believer of education is power. And if we can educate, if we can help, we can teach people, then hopefully we can change the world, quite literally. But
absolutely.
I think that, absolutely. I mean, if people aren't given the opportunity to understand what they're feeling, then... I mean, mental health is everything, right? Like, if I don't have my mental health, I don't have anything. And my mental health affects everything. Physical health, work, everything like that. But we have to learn resilience. And resilience is not just getting over with it. It's being, it's like, for example, like a ping pong ball, right? I throw a ping pong ball at a wall and it bounces back. That's resilience. Resilience is not breaking something. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to break to continue. We've actually just got to get the skills to bounce back. And like you were saying, Gareth, I mean, things are, you know, life is hard. There are obstacles.
Sure.
It's how we deal with it and how we move forward.
Yeah. And then how much of an emphasis, or rather, how important would you deem mental health in a workplace?
Oh my gosh, so important.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's one place you spend a lot of time in.
Just hang on.
Yeah.
Schools, universities and workplaces in South Africa have become proxy parents for people who weren't raised properly.
Yeah.
I'm going to explain myself, because I know that's a cold, hard statement to make.
But it's
true. Let me explain. So a lot of people, I don't know, they were raised like veal or something. So like put in a cage and beaten. I don't know how the hell, you know, parents have children and then behave like this. But a lot of kids have grown up very badly. They don't have any guidance, or they're just like given the longest leash imaginable, and they think the world is all there for them. And they're the main, they've got main character energy. They go through their life thinking everyone else is just an NPC in my big movie. And all along the way, they forget that they might just be a very, very, very small wheel in a big machine. And if your job is to add up the numbers in the column, I don't give two shits about how sad your relationships are, or how miserable your relationship with your mother is, or whether or not you have gambling debts or anything else. You only come into me and my world for like 8 hours a day. And why don't you just get on with it and do what you're here to do, and I'll pay you. That's enough. I'm not also responsible for your mental health. No?
So, yes, but at the end of the day, we've also got to look, what is a company? A company's trying to make money.
Yeah.
How do you make money if your employees are burnt out? And yes, things at home, unfortunately, come into the workplace. There's workplace bullying. There's
then go and get another job. Like, yeah. If you're really unhappy, no, come on. Like, some personal responsibility here. Why is the company always the parent and you're always the child? If you look at it as an equal relationship, which it should be, in a free market, you should be able to say, I'm being paid well, but this job is horrible. I don't feel like they're looking after me. I'm burnt out. All those things that you just said. I'm going to leave. I have the confidence in myself to know I can do better somewhere else. Get up, pack your stuff, and get out. Resign.
Gareth, you can always do that. To find a job.
Sure it is. Then you need to be so sure of yourself. Otherwise, suck it up. Because you need the money. You don't have a million choices. You got two. Stay and suck it up, or go and find another job because you're better than this. That's all.
And I think it's not the company's job or responsibility to solve, for example, your mental health problems, right?
Yes.
But if a company is in a position to provide access to support, then it's still the individual's responsibility to access that.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what we are seeing is companies are providing, for example, like reduced services or three or two sessions available at a therapist or whatever, because I think psychology, you know, it's expensive, but it's the same as medical aid. Companies provide, what is it, like 50% sometimes more, those benefits.
Yes.
I think that's where it is. It's those benefits. And then you've said, okay, cool, you've got access, right? But it's still your responsibility to go and take that and do something with it.
So Wade says I'm being a little idealistic, and there are lots of people who disagree with me here. Carl says Gareth has clearly never run a business with more than 10 people. There's a balancing act. If you run the business, you need to balance empathy with pragmatism. So let's be clear. I'm not talking about how I behave in the business environment. I'm trying to bring an argument to Kaylee, who deals with this stuff all the time, so that she can give me the sensible position between an extreme position and another extreme position. I mean, you also get the companies who do absolutely everything for their employees, right? They basically tit feed the employee from the moment they walk in the door.
Absolutely.
They are given these and those things. You have 5 mental health appointments this month if you'd like them, and we'll warm your feet if it's a bit cold at work today.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling just slightly not great, why don't you just rather stay at home? You get that as well. You get those companies
really
that do that.
Soft companies.
And invariably, those people also get taken advantage of.
I've seen that. Actually, that's happening to a friend of mine now. They actually have someone in their company who is so useless. And I keep telling my friend that, you know, if this person worked in my company, they would have been gone up.
And you
very
can't
quick.
Fire anyone in South Africa. That's another
very
thing.
Difficult.
So
you have to
could
build
have
a case.
You could have some real mental health case. You could have some complete raving lunatic who's on your staff, and they started off fine and they were doing a good job and they brought in the money and everything was working, and then they became crazy, and their craziness became evident to all, and you can't get rid of someone. I mean, what are the grounds that you could fire someone for mental health? Probably zero.
It's
impossible.
They'd come after you with CCMA.
For sure, CCMA, and then you'd have a whole bunch of other crazies who will look after the crazy people, because they themselves are thinking, don't want this to happen to me. We better defend this lunatic, right?
Yeah, I think that is. I mean, like, it is so difficult, right, in South Africa to do any form of change within the business. But I think at the end of the day, it's also if somebody is acting that way or whatever the case is, like if the company is in a position to help. Yeah. Then
you want to, sure.
Exactly.
I mean, you want people in your company to be stable,
happy,
and cared for, and you want to show compassion.
But building resilience.
Okay.
Because adults need that too.
I just want to go back quickly because MASH has taken us onto the workplace tangent here, which is cool because I think it affects a lot of people. But let's just go back to what you said earlier about suicide being the number one concern. We've covered that as much as we have time for.
Yeah.
What about depression and the difference between someone who is clinically depressed and has been diagnosed by someone who knows what they're doing and someone who's just sad? Because you should be sad when someone in your family dies, for example. And should you be showing that sadness in a certain way? I don't think that we can prescribe that to people.
Yeah.
And maybe some people want to go back to work the day after something like that has happened because work distracts them enough that they can focus on that, do well at work, and don't have to think too much about their feelings. Mm. For other people, they'll want to sit and talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There are people who want to talk. Yeah. I actually worked with someone who just couldn't stop crying about the issues every day.
Mash, your life is so amazing. How did you eventually get them to shut up?
So every time they'd come to the kitchen to make coffee, everybody would walk out.
They'd burst into tears?
Yeah, they'll just burst into tears. Whoever was there talking, whoever was available to listen, this person would burst into tears and start venting to this person. Whoever was willing to listen.
Shame.
But from my experience, so one thing I have to mention is I've actually been diagnosed as clinically depressed before.
You have?
Yes.
Okay.
By an actual therapist.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've been diagnosed before. And one thing about it is I'm the happiest person you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
You'll never think. I'm so happy-go-lucky. I was shocked myself when I was diagnosed. Because it was a very long questionnaire that I had to fill. Very long questionnaire with some answers and all that kind of stuff. And when they diagnosed me, they were like, yeah, you're clinically depressed. I was like, there's no ways.
Get out of my studio.
Get out of here.
No, I mean, is that true? Because I've heard that from a number of people too who've said it doesn't necessarily manifest in the way that you behave on a day-to-day basis.
It's not that.
But if Mash is feeling dark and unhappy...
Yeah.
It affects him worse than it would someone who doesn't have depression. And sometimes it's debilitating to the point where he maybe can't do the things he has to do. Is that true for you, Mash?
For me, I can still do everything. I think one thing about me is I have so much discipline, I have so much resilience that I do shit even when I don't want to.
How does the depression that you were diagnosed with, how does it manifest in your life?
So based on the questionnaire that I did, it manifests when I'm alone. When I'm alone, that's where all the tick boxes were slanting towards the depression that I have. So when I'm alone, that's where I start overthinking things. I start thinking that I'm such a loser and all that kind of stuff. I just start having all these thoughts. And that is part of the reason why it's so difficult for me to just sit still. I cannot sit still. I always have to be doing something. I always have to keep my mind busy.
Well, Katie's nodding
as a result.
Head. Yeah?
So yeah, that's how it manifests with me. Whenever I'm not doing anything is an issue. That's also quitting vaping was so difficult for me. Because now I always had all day long. Now I no longer have this thing to just keep me grounded and just keep me at a level zero. I now have to do something else.
There is a link though between addiction and mental health.
Oh, right? Definitely. Definitely. And that's the thing is, I mean, just in South Africa, like internationally, yes. But in South Africa, I mean, addiction rates are so, so high.
Yes.
And it's not just alcohol. It's not just the normal like addiction that we think of, right? It's not just alcohol, drugs.
Gambling, they sex. Think,
exactly.
It's also social media. We were talking about that earlier.
Self-harm is an addiction as well. Like there's so many different types.
Attention seeking.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, and that's the thing, right? It's like there are so many different things that people are like dealing with. Yeah. Like you're fine with people, but when you're alone, I'm the same. I can't be alone. I literally like I get depressed so quickly. I'm like, no, I can't. I need to be with people. But if you are, I mean, you can't always be with people. Mm. So that's kind of where, and one of the reasons why I started Engage Support is so that you can then, if you are alone at home, therapy is expensive. It's not always attainable for someone. But 24/7, there's got to be someone where you can vent to, just ask, like, am I okay? What can I do? And it's also taking that initiative, like, okay, cool, let me go and look at this resource. What coping technique can I implement? Let me do some journaling. Let me do some of this. Because, you know, it's in those moments where we do struggle. Mm. And it's those people where, like, if I'm at home alone, what do I do? Do I ruminate in my thoughts? Do I just sit there and I overthink, overthink, overthink? And that's something that it's so prevalent. I think everything that I've said today is just so prevalent, but overthinking, so prevalent.
So are there still places, are there still people who are struggling to address these things like we are this morning head on? Is it still shameful and taboo in certain parts of South Africa, with certain population groups, age groups, people who have different resource levels? Where are people being left out of this mental health care net?
Yeah, and I think that's where it is. It's kind of both. So yes, people are open to mental health, especially the younger generation. I mean, they talk about mental health so openly and so freely.
They never stop.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the older generation, there is still that stigma.
They never fucking stop. They are so fascinated by their own boring fucking lives and their own shitty mental health conditions that most of them are writing novels every morning and every night in their heads about boring nonsense. But older people are not, they have this attitude,
stigma,
right?
Yeah.
So if you think about the silent generation, most of them are gone now, but even the boomers, it's like, oh, just be strong. Yeah. And they don't dig deep at all. And perhaps they have a much worse time than they're letting on.
100%. And the stigma of going to therapy, especially within the African community, of like, you know, there's this like way up of kind of going towards, like, for example, like spiritual.
Go to the Sangoma. You know?
Exactly. Or it's not even, you don't need therapy. It's like, this is a spiritual problem that
your ancestors
is your
basically,
fault.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. You're responsible.
Exactly. Where it's not. Like, and that's where I think there is that balance between it's so closed and open.
Can I also mention, when it comes to the spiritual side of things, especially with ancestors and all that kind of stuff, coming from a family that is very spiritual, there's this also thing of removing responsibility from yourself. Mm. So with my family, for example, my family can't disown me, chair. But anyway.
It's all right. You're just giving back some of what you got as a kid. Go on.
So my family has this thing where anything that goes wrong in the family, anything, someone's bewitched us. Someone has bewitched someone. That's always the thing.
External,
and it's not just my
external
family.
External locus of responsibility.
Yes, yeah. It's not just with my family. I realized that going on Twitter, all black people have that. Everybody has an aunt who's bewitched them. Everybody has somebody who's bewitched somebody. And that's the reason why maybe that's why my son is not successful. He's not successful because that Rakhadi bewitched him so that his success would go to her and her children. There's so much of that in black culture that we just overlook it. It's become so normal. In fact, somebody tweeted us not so long ago, like, do we all have a Rakhadi who's bewitched us? And everyone was like, yes, we do.
This is fascinating. I think you've opened up a whole other can of worms. That's amazing.
It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
I think that needs, we need to get into that.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that black families don't want to take responsibility. Even in my family, when I confronted them after I started doing therapy last year, they were like, yeah, but we are bewitched. I'm like, no, you are not. You need to start taking responsibility for yourself and for the way that your kids turned out as well. You can't blame everything on some witch. You can't.
Hey, listen, I mean, people have been doing that for thousands of years, right? Eish. There's some woman in the village who looks a bit suspicious. She must be bewitching everybody.
Absolutely. Akili, don't look at me like that. Are you bewitching me?
If only I had magic powers.
So that's interesting, because I wonder if mental health experts and people who are practitioners of mental health and therapy and talk therapy and, you know, drug therapy and whatever other kinds of therapy there are, I wonder if they are treating what Mash has just said as a serious consideration, because the more we get to talk openly about these things, and most people won't, which is why Mash is so exceptional, but most people won't. And I wonder if we start to take these things head on, we won't solve a lot of problems the way you are at scale, because we'll address things that are uncomfortable truths and realities for so many people.
Yeah. Mm. And that's the thing, is I think that it has to be addressed head on, but at the same time, it is.
Are you saying
so
we should
important.
Burn witches? Is that what you're saying?
Imagine.
I mean, I think that's a good place to start, don't you? Find the Rakhadi who's bewitching everybody and burn her in the town square, no? Like that's not what you're saying.
It's such an actual thing. Like even when my brother completed suicide in 2018. No explanation, no letter, no nothing. Who did we blame? Oh, the Rakhadi, who bewitched him.
Yeah.
Who bewitched our family.
Yeah.
That was always the blame. And I remember I was sitting alone at home when I found out. I was home alone. And I remember finding out from one of my aunts that his last phone call was to my parents to ask for money. And to ask for 1,000 rand. And my parents were like, no, we don't have money. You know, and the following day he was, gone.
I wonder what the link is. We spoke about the link between mental health and the workplace, for example. But I wonder what the more pervasive and obvious link between financial ruin, which for some people is the end of their world.
Yeah. That's a big
and suicide
one.
Is. And I know in South Africa, many men, we always talk about women and men's mental health as if they're completely different, but sometimes they're quite similar. Mm-hmm. One area it is different is that men in South Africa are largely evaluated on their ability to bring home the bacon.
Yeah.
If you're a guy who can't make money, I think a lot of men who commit suicide in South Africa, again, I'm basing this only on anecdotal evidence that I've been privy to, but I wonder how many men, if we did the research properly, and you might have more of a view on this than I do, how many men are just doing that because they cannot bring money home and that is all that they are good for some families.
And some of them feel like, okay, me gone, at least they'll have money. So this is me doing them a favor. This is all I can do. This is all I'm worth.
That's very, very sad.
And that's a lot of what people think.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people that have attempted suicide, you then speak to them afterwards and they're like, no, it was, you know, almost the reason was so that I could give my family money because it's easier. And that is, it's so sad, but it's also just showing us, I mean, for example, so my cousin committed suicide as well. We're three people here and we already know two people that have committed suicide.
You see? Yeah.
It's mental health is everywhere. Mm. You said you were clinically diagnosed. Same, me as well. Like, this is the thing. It's the statistics in South Africa are 1 in 3 people in South Africa will at some point in their life struggle with mental health. Mm. There's three of us and there's two of us already. So,
I'm lucky. I'm free. Yay, I made it.
But it just shows how prevalent mental health challenges and struggles are in the world. And that's why we've got to have conversations like this, be open, talk about it. But it's also, it's not just one cause. It's financial, it's trauma, it's generational, it's societal, it's just everything.
Well, listen, I mean, we're not going to get to the bottom of this in 1 hour with you, but I'm so happy you come and join us this morning. And Mash, you are always just, I mean, every time I think I know everything about you, there's like new layers.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But that thing that you said about the kind of ancestors and the rachadis and the bewitching and like an external locus of responsibility, I think you've touched on something fascinating that we've got to get into again. Thank you for coming in. Thank you so much,
Kaylee.
So and most importantly, thank you for being with us this morning. We will be back on Wednesday at 6 a.m. bright and early. If you've got any comments or something you want to share, something you want to suggest, a guest that you really want to have, let us know. Just drop it in the comment section on YouTube. If you haven't liked and subscribed, how many times do I have to tell you? I mean, really, do you want me to set the mental health people on you? You want me to bewitch you? I'll find, where's Gogo Mawen? I'm going to find her straight after the show. We're going to bewitch you motherfuckers unless you subscribed and liked.
I'll call her.
Right, let's get her. And Scotteni as well. Get both of those, Gogo Maweni and Scotteni. We're going to get onto some bewitching this afternoon. Woo-hoo. Get ready. It's all coming. Cheers. See you Wednesday.
Ciao.